And Maressa's like, well, maybe that wasn't the case. Maybe right. he literally was using the train to get from one town to another town for a specific reason.
Under the radar.
Yes,
so exactly. maybe he wasn't experienced at this. Maybe he didn't know about the ice bunker. Maybe he did think it was a safe place
and,
to be.
Right, and like as a black man was on one of the trains trying to hide.
And if that's the case, where did he start and where was he trying to go? This show, oh my God.
Girl, I took the dog out this morning at 4 a.m. when I woke up and...
Go back to the joke. This is coming out. I don't know if it's coming out around the Joe Kenda. We just did the Devil in the Mountains thing where both Patrick and Joe Kenda have to announce that they wake up earlier than everybody else.
He gets up at 5:30. That's sleeping in. But lunch. The point is, it is the end of June. It was 58 degrees.
Well, it was like 90 2 days ago.
I know, but I was so cold. I was so cold.
Not a hoodie.
Okay, I just forgot.
Deal with it.
I'm like, I'm not going back upstairs.
No.
Hi, Julie Mezzavalli.
Hello, Patrick Hines.
Oh my God, what are we? We're talking about your future career today.
Well, okay, this is our eighth bonus episode. Welcome to a bonus episode drop. This is the show Naming the Dead, season one, episode four, The Body on the Train. It is on Hulu. Real quick, I just want to say, we just dropped like a week ago another Naming the Dead episode.
Yeah.
Our listeners are I just want to give a shout out to the listeners who are loving the series.
It's so good.
I'm getting so many DMs and seeing so many comments from people being like, oh my God, thank you for turning us onto the show.
Yeah.
It's so, so good. It's I just really, want to shout it out.
So it's just like so nice seeing people do the good work.
I know. I love it.
For a man buried at the Northwest Cemetery, his story is lost along with his identity.
This all started as one of my first big stories as a news reporter.
He was found decades ago on a train cart and buried with a grave marker that reads Unknown Negro.
The moment I saw those words, it struck me to my core. I knew this was more than just another news story. I want to know who he really is. That's what I want to know.
So we're in Lincoln County, Nebraska. We meet Maressa Burke.
Love her.
She's just a woman on a mission. And like, okay, here's her story. And then I just want to say like how I kind of relate to it. We're in a graveyard. It's North Platte Cemetery. This was one of Maressa's first big stories as a news reporter, she tells us. And the man that she's talking about was found decades ago, dead in a train car, buried with the grave marker in this cemetery as Unknown Negro.
Right.
And she sees it and immediately knows it's like, one of her missions in life is to identify this man. Mm-hmm. And just as a student of history myself, like somebody who like really cares about the people who came before us and did the good work and whatever, I totally get this. I totally understand. Like, we're going to learn later that Maressa's family has like deep ties to the Black civil rights community,
huge.
The Black civil rights movement. And it just means so much to her in the way that like the gay history stuff means so much to me. So I felt like very, very close to this episode.
Yeah, this is an excellent episode. The whole show is. But yeah. So documents say that the date of death is October 4th, 1961. The name is, we're going to say a lot of shitty words here.
Yeah.
The context is the time. It's 1961.
Yes.
They said, we don't agree with it. It's just what we're just quoting the documents. The name is unidentified transient and literally everything else says unknown. Like unknown is listed. We just know that he's a black man.
We don't know where he's from. We don't know like his date of birth. We don't know anything about him.
And so Maressa has been working on this case for 2 years. And
yes.
She so far thinks the man is about 60 years old. And she tells us that his body was found on a coast-to-coast freight train.
Yes.
So the death certificate says transient. So she's wondering like, okay, well, if he was like riding the rails as a way of life, then the train route is kind of meaningless.
Yes.
Like it kind of doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
But in this time, then we just get like, I also love this show because they're just like, oh my God, we're going to drop something amazing with no prep.
Yeah.
Because we learn also, after we learn that Maressa has convinced the local cops to exhume the remains.
And we're watching it happen. And I got to tell you, like everybody working on this is really invested. Like
very.
We're seeing Maressa by the graveside. She's super emotional. You can tell the people who are, there's like archaeologists and the local cops.
Yeah.
And they are all they're all wearing masks, but you can see in their eyes how like they are taking, it's so sacred to exhume a body.
Yeah.
It's very moving and a little bit I'm going to say creepy. Like, to exhume a body is just like, it feels just so like real.
And there's also like a lot of hope here too.
Yes.
Because Jennifer Randolph, she's the director of cases for the DNA Doe Project. She's been in every episode of this.
Yeah.
And Dr. Kelly Kincaid is back too. And as we know, the DNA Doe Project needs DNA. To get some clues here, that's right in the name, the DNA Doe Project.
Yeah, yeah.
So Dr. Kelly Kincaid, she's the one who checks the DNA to see how good the sample is. And she's like, I got to tell you, Jennifer, it's not really looking good. There are a lot of conditions that lead to a bad sample. And this case kind of hits on all of them.
He's been in the ground 60 plus years.
Water is a real problem. That's located on the edge of a golf course, which means there's like these sprinkler systems. Freeze thaws are bad for DNA preservation. And in Nebraska, you have hot summers and cold, long winters.
But we can't know until we try.
It depends on how long he was buried, if he's in the soil versus a coffin.
Right.
And I was watching it again today and I was like, oh God, we don't even know if this man was buried in a coffin or if he's just a body in the dirt.
And we do, as we're seeing them exhume the body, just real quick, there is a statue of Jesus that has been buried with him. And I'm like, okay, so a religious person buried him, I'm assuming.
It's also like this statue of Jesus is made out of some kind of metal that has not tarnished.
Right.
And it's beautiful. And my mom went to a seminary school when she was like later in life. And there's a statue it was a life-size statue that was very similar, that was always like so moving to me.
Wow.
Because it's the way the metal is bent and the way that like the holding of the head, it's a very stunning sort of like visual of this thing. And for it to be the first thing they find when they're digging up this body is very emotional, very spiritual. It was crazy to see.
And it's so incredible because Marissa is here watching this and she's feeling everything. And she gasps.
Yeah.
And you see her gasp and she's like, you know, holding her face. And it's just to watch it, like she's watching them collect these bones. And it's very, very moving.
Because also the first thing they find is a piece of casket. So I was like, oh, thank God. Okay, thank God. Like they buried him in a casket. Like that's one strike taken away.
Right. And Marissa says,
to see his remains, to see his skull. It's like, that's him. That's the unknown Negro. I'm closer to him than I was before. It gives me hope. It really does.
I'm closer to him than I was before. It gives me hope. It really does. It's a very beautiful moment.
It's really beautiful. And like, once again, with the human remains, like it's jarring to see them.
It is. It's done better than I've seen it in other shows and series and docs, you know?
And there's no delicate way to do it, especially when you don't know how the body has been buried.
Yeah.
They're kind of just like, because they're using I don't know what these boy things are called, but it's like a forklift or something.
I'm an excavator.
They stop using that. And they're digging with their hands.
Well,
and like, what an intimate thing to actually be like digging with your hands down to somebody's coffin.
I mean, so they bring his remains to the lab at this chapel. And Dr. Kelly Kincaid from the DNA Doe Project, it's like almost a full skeleton. It's almost a complete skeleton, which is a big win, number one. But Dr. Kelly goes, way to go, Nebraska soil. All of her like trepidation or everything where she was like, I don't know. It is all out the window. Nebraska soil was great.
The only thing I was thinking in that moment was like, Dr. Kelly, could you say like, way to go, Nebraska excavation team?
Yes, that too.
Like, all of these people have assembled this man's like remains. They've assembled like a full skeleton. They've been out there digging, like they dug up a body today and she's thanking the soil, which I get it. She's a scientist. I understand.
The soil could have had all of those factors.
I know.
Like so that the amazing team didn't really have much to pull to begin with.
No, it's true. And Marissa tells us that there was no autopsy performed, but we see that this man has a broken rib on the right side and a broken rib on the left side, but no way to tell how he died.
Right.
So like, obviously those aren't life-threatening injuries in most cases. So it's like, wait, what happened to this guy? Girl, Hiya is back. Look, we have Hiya in our house. We have for a very long time now. It's kids' vitamins. And most kids' vitamins are candy, not Hiya.
Yeah, back in the day, it was just like lots of sugar and additives and dyes.
Yep.
But no, not anymore.
No, and Daisy wakes up. It's the first thing she takes every single day. She absolutely loves it. We don't even have to ask her to do it. She's obsessed.
Yeah, it's designed for kids 2 and up. It ships right to your door. And you get this awesome reusable bottle and stickers.
She loves that.
With your first order. And then they send you refills every month.
Also, fam, Hiya just just launched something brand new. So if your kids are active and growing, adding in a clean protein powder with added minerals designed just for kids might be exactly what they need.
Hiya's new Kids Daily Growth Plus Protein is a total game changer. It's more than a protein shake. It's a purity-awarded clean protein powder with added minerals and healthy fats that mixes right into water, smoothies, and more to support muscle development and cognition to fuel everything they got going on.
Let me tell you, Daisy loves that too. I wasn't sure at first if it was going to be her thing, but yep, we mix it with water every single morning.
So easy.
And she loves it.
Yeah.
So fam, we've worked out a special deal with Hiya.
Receive 50% off your first order on any of their products.
To claim this deal, you must go to hiyahealth.com/TCO.
This deal is not available on their regular website.
Go to hiyahealth.com/TCO to get your kids the full body support they deserve.
Aww.
Just as, like, as we're ending this scene, like, because Dr. Kelly is on, like, a FaceTime with the group in the room.
Yeah.
And the group in the room is, like, they're so excited because Dr. Kelly is, like, wait, like, there's a tooth with a root and the root is what they need.
Yeah.
And, like, the team on this side is, like, oh, my God, like, we're so excited. Like, everyone involved in this series, like, all of the medical experts they get are all, like, they just want it to work.
100%.
They just, like, everyone's so all in.
And this was so close to not working.
I know.
And now they got the good news
they
need.
So many factors against it.
That we can, like, keep working.
Yeah.
We can keep the work going. So Sergeant Meyer finds a news article from November 3rd, 1961, which is 2 days after our John Doe's burial. And it has the cause of death.
Yes.
In 1961 language. It says,
dead man still not identified. A Negro man found crushed in a railroad refrigerator ice cart was found here Tuesday morning by railroad workers cleaning out the cars.
Crushed in an ice car?
He was crushed in a railroad refrigerator ice cart. And I'm like, a what?
I know. I didn't know what this was either.
So Sergeant Meyer's like, okay, this feels off because if this man was used to riding trains, then he for sure would know that this is a really dangerous place to be.
So let me, dear listener and viewer, explain to you what this is. Because, like, they tell us later, but just so you can understand, like, these ice cars are used to cool the trains because these trains carry produce. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to understand in our 2026 brains, but basically these are like silos in a train car that are empty until a train pulls up to this machine that, like, a lever is pulled and 5,000 pounds of ice are dropped in.
Like, huge, huge ice blocks are dropped through these hatches into these, like, bunker compartments. And this was done regularly.
Right. And so what the sergeant here is saying is that, like, if he was riding the rails all the time, he would have known that an empty ice silo would be a very dangerous place for somebody to ride or sleep or be, because sooner or later, like, without warning, they're going to stop and it's going to be full of 5,000 pounds of ice.
Right. And so Marissa's like, I need eyes on the ice car. I need to know exactly what this is, what this looks like, so she can try to figure out what happened.
Yeah.
She meets Henry Baum, the president of the Niles Canyon Railway Museum, and he's going to explain it all to us.
Can we just, like, take a moment for the fact that there is a railway museum?
And that he's the president of it?
He's the president. I love people who love weird shit and preserve it.
This is what I mean. I love enthusiasts.
Yes, anything.
I love people, we were just talking about this, at the top of their game, found a thing they love and do it well. The more niche, the better.
A railway museum. Like, there in New York City, there is
a
transit museum, which is, like, sounds so boring, but then you go and, like, you see the subway cars from, like, the 1940s, which, by the way, once a year they still run on the tracks and you can ride them. And I did once.
Did I tell you that's what my grandfather did after
he stopped being a Nazi?
No, he never was. He was forced into Mussolini's army. I just told the story. And then, like, showed everyone in Utah how to cook.
Oh, yeah.
He was a cooperative. But after that,
not that your food's bad, it's that you don't know how to cook it. You think I forget?
That's literally what he said. He was top tier. But anyway, he was a conductor in the New York City MTA.
That's wild.
So that's, like, what he did for a very, very long time. So, like, in, like, the 50s.
And those old railway cars are old and fancy. Like, they're nice.
Yeah. It's not what it is today.
It's not what it is today.
No, it was, like, very cool. Anyway, but I freaking love these two because Marissa's like, I have so many questions. I hope you can answer them. And Henry's like, well, I'll try.
I'll do my best.
So he explains.
Ice cars were used to keep the produce grown on the West Coast fresh on the multi-day journey to the cities of the East.
Was there ever a lock on it or anything like that?
Oh, they would put a lock on it so people didn't get in and help themselves to a box of cucumbers.
So, you know, people didn't get in and help themselves to a box of cucumbers. Get these to a show. Get these to a show.
Do you know that cucumbers are my least favorite vegetable? I hate
them.
I don't know. I can't explain it. Because I love pickles, but yeah. I hate cucumbers. Like a raw cucumber.
You know that a pickle is a cucumber.
That's what I mean. Like, I love a pickle, but a raw cucumber, because I'm on one of those cilantro people too. I get the specialty parking at Chipotle for people with the cilantro thing that you can't eat it because it tastes like
specialty
soap.
Parking.
It's a joke. It's a joke. But they would have like reserve parking for like those of us who are like have such sad lives that we don't like the taste of cilantro.
Can't even be near cilantro. Like it's a peanut allergy on a plane.
Exactly. That had happened to me twice in a row. Like everyone like was forced to throw their nuts away. It was wild.
Why are we serving nuts on a plane?
Like the most controlled environment where good luck if you got an allergy.
Well, I don't understand. Didn't they stop doing it? But it feels like personal.
I know.
We're going to serve nuts in this like closed tin can. And if you have a nut allergy, good luck to you.
We had people over the other night. We had a bowl of mixed nuts out. And a friend of a friend was looking in it. He's like, oh, I can't have anything. I just can't have the cashews. My throat will swell. I'm like, we're throwing all the nuts away in this house.
Wasn't like touching it with his hand.
No. Okay. He was like peering into it to see if there was cashews. And we had 13 people. It was for our Tony's party. I made everybody get up and wash their hands. And I threw away all the nuts.
Yeah.
I'm keeping people alive.
Also, here's my thing. People with allergies like this.
Yeah.
My question is, and it's also like, I feel bad about it. Your whole life has to be like, are you going to have cashews there?
Right. Don't be nice about it.
And it's kind of, I'm so sorry, like on the person, I think, to be like, hey, heads up. Thank you for this invite.
Yes.
I could die if you serve a cashew. Could you please
totally
hold it on the cashews one night?
Could you cool it on the cashews, Heinz?
And I know that that's like a miserable way to live, to be hypervigilant about it.
Yeah.
But it's kind of on the person to say it instead of you polling people about what their allergies are.
Then I was like, we need EpiPens at my house. Like, we have gatherings with a lot of times people I don't know, like friends bring friends or whatever. I don't know what people need. We need EpiPens.
Well, the person needs to carry the EpiPen.
I know. But what if they just used it last week and they didn't re-up? We need like a defibrillator.
Well, then you can't go out without telling people what your allergy is.
True.
Isn't that part of the gig? Yeah. It's unfortunate. I'm not saying
it's
flippantly.
It's no way to live. I know.
It's a mess, but I feel like—
Can you see me running through a room throwing people and drinks out of the way with an EpiPen to stick the guy in the neck, just like saving the day?
Isn't it right in the thigh?
That's the other thing. I don't even know where to stick the guy.
You got the person.
I know.
With the affliction, for lack of a better term, has to be telling people and communicating. Use your words.
Ben, where do I stick ya? If I got to stick ya with an EpiPen, where does it go?
Right.
Does it go in your neck?
Don't be like, oh, are there cashews here? I feel my itchy throat. Like, no, you got to get ahead of it.
You got the EpiPen, the guy's down. You go and you stab the guy in the wrong place and he dies anyway. You did the best you could.
I think everyone needs to communicate better.
I couldn't agree more.
But anyway, these two are having fun getting to know each other.
Yeah.
And so we learned that, you know, the man's body, our John Joe, was found in one of these ice bunkers and the man was crushed by ice. So now we're on top of the car. They're showing us how this mechanism works. It is terrifying. The ice is heavy AF.
I mean, it's also like Marissa goes into the ice
thing. She looks so cool.
She
just
does.
Just hopping down so effortlessly. It's like one move.
Totally. But like she keeps her head above ground because that shit is scary. Like it looks like the ice is going to fall on you any second.
And so Marissa's like,
this just doesn't seem like a way somebody would want to travel. I mean, it's cold, it's dark, not a lot of space. It's just almost inhumane. I think what's getting me the most is I don't think he wanted to be in there.
She says it's almost inhumane. It's meant for ice.
Right. And I think the idea, and we never get to the bottom of this, but like the idea was this man killed and put there?
Right.
Or was he in there and died because the ice fell on him?
As Marissa is asking all of these questions, Henry is casually chilling on the top of this train car.
Man, you have to picture they're on a train car.
He's
from
like resting on his arm and his elbow, laying.
The guy's wearing overalls. They're 30 feet in the air having a cash conversation.
And Marissa's like on her knees, you know, like kind of peering in. And he's just laying there like, Marissa, I don't know. What are we going to do about this?
This is his dream day, though. Like, these train cars are his life. He built a whole museum around it. He got himself elected president. And today there's a lady here who wants to know about it.
And Marissa's so cool and so invested that Henry is super invested.
Totally.
And she's making him feel so comfortable. He's just lounging.
I know.
Get these to a show.
I know. Girl, hers is back. Look, this is all about losing weight the healthy way with hers.
Yeah, so Weight Loss by Hers is designed to support you in reaching your goals with access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen.
Yes, so fam, you know I've been on the GLP-1s for a long time. I've had a really good experience with it. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise.
Yeah, and everything is 100% online through Hers. So yep. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. That's very important.
Yep.
And if prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door and no insurance necessary.
And let me tell you, the Wegovy with Hers, it helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep the weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first ever GLP-1 pill for weight loss, so there are no needles needed.
That's a bonus.
It's really good, and it works just as effectively.
Yeah.
So fam, are you ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/TCO to get personalized, affordable care that gets you.
That's forhers.com/TCO.
Forhers.com/TCO.
Weight Loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information and restrictions, visit forhers.com. Back in Texas with the DNA Doe Project, the project is now, their mission is called the Ice Car John Doe.
And by the way, I want to say Jennifer has put together a weekend intensive. It's in Texas. They are all outside, probably somewhere on her property under a tent.
There's like 13 of them.
In the out of doors.
13 volunteers.
I know.
They're on their computers.
One of these days, we're going to see you in there. One of these days, they're going to be like, there's GP with the top knot and the pencils.
They're going to sort this shit out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I love the show so much.
I know.
Give me 1,000 more episodes. So Dr. Kelly has successfully extracted the DNA.
Why that wasn't like a 4-minute, like, dun, 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 like, will there be enough DNA to use? There just is.
Because these people are awesome.
I know.
And Dr. Kelly's like, move over.
Yeah, we got
this. Hold my beer. I got this.
We got it.
So now it's in the database and there are thousands of matches, but even the closest matches are distant cousins.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay. So they're using everything they can. We're going through public records and obituaries and newspapers. However, this man is Black, specifically African-American.
Yes.
And this makes it difficult only because the quote from Jennifer, who like runs the show, she says,
with African-American genealogy, once we are pre-emancipation, enslaved people are not known by their name.
Once we are pre-emancipation, enslaved people are not known by their name. When I tell you I hate that sentence,
yeah.
Down to my soul.
I mean, and that is like, what is that, 1886? You know what I mean? Like, that is not that long ago.
So we're looking at the 1860 U.S. federal census. This is, for context, this is 3 years before the Emancipation Proclamation and 5 years before the 13th Amendment, which abolished slavery. So we're definitely pre-emancipation.
And that's the thing with this genealogy is like, oftentimes you have to go back that far or farther.
Right. So they find, these words are super horrible,
yeah.
But they find what is called a slave schedule,
yeah.
And it doesn't include their name or any other information. It's just like their stats, like
yeah.
Age. It's so horrifying. And like, we need a name because that is really important. The DNA is super important, obviously, but like, we need to start building our tree.
Right.
We need the name of this person.
So we take a quick break from this right here to find out about Marissa's like deep family ties to the civil rights movement.
Hi. God.
Because we learned that her family's ties to the movement date back to when they think this Doe died.
Yes.
So then she says, to me, he's great Uncle Papa to the world, Mukasa Papa Ricks.
Growing up, I always enjoyed my uncle coming into town and hearing the stories of Martin Luther King Jr. being there and them planning the civil rights movement.
We're seeing all of these images of this man, like, marching with Dr. Martin Luther King.
Yes.
By his side.
Yes.
Like, very, very close to him.
I got
to
tell you, he's the man that a lot of people credit with popularizing the phrase Black Power. I took a course at Fordham called the 60s. I learned about him.
Wow.
And I'll tell you more later. I DM'd with Marissa about this. I reached out to her because I just think she's so incredible. And I knew, I could be misremembering, but I was like, I know that name. And
yeah.
When I looked into more about what he did, like he organized voter registration, marches, sit-ins, like you name it. He was right there. And
wow.
Like, I'm thinking when I was so familiar and I was like, where do I know that? My memory is that it was at this class called, in this class called the 60s, because the professor was like super in on that, was on every list, was like, but his house was bugged. Like
oh,
he was
shit.
He was in the thick of it too. But If my memory is wrong, then I'm wrong. But I knew about this guy. And I'm telling you, I think it was that course. Why wouldn't it be?
No, of course it has to be.
Right? So anyway, this guy's like the real deal.
For sure.
And Marissa is... And, like, she has ties. Well,
because you can tell, because, like you see pictures of, like, civil rights marches with Martin Luther King, and there's thousands of people. This man is right next to him.
There.
He's standing shoulder to shoulder.
So Marissa is going to tell us, like, what was going on historically at the time of this man's death in 1961.
Yeah.
And she's told all of the stuff that we know about, but, like, something kind of deeper. She goes,
1961 was a hard time for African-American people to travel. Public transportation, like a bus, or even hitchhiking, because you didn't know. You just didn't know what you were gonna encounter.
Because public transportation either wasn't allowed or it wasn't safe. And she says you just didn't know what you were gonna encounter. So when people were like protesting segregation on the interstate bus routes, they were just met, they were met with violence like everything else.
But and like serious violence. Yeah. Like we see them like bombing buses full of people.
Right.
Like, I mean, really serious violence.
And so Marissa's saying the train might have actually been the safest way to travel across the country.
Yeah.
And just because the death certificate says he was a quote transient doesn't make it true.
Right.
This is 1961 in Nebraska.
And when they use the word quote transient, we're talking about people who like lived on the trains. Like that was their whole way of life. And Marissa's like, well, maybe that wasn't the case. Maybe he literally was using the train to get from one town to another town for a specific reason.
Under the radar.
Yes,
so exactly. Maybe he wasn't experienced at this. Maybe he didn't know about the ice bunker. Maybe he did think it was a safe place to be.
Right. And like as a black man was on one of the trains trying to hide.
And if that's the case, where did he start and where was he trying to go? This show, oh my God.
Yeah.
So the train route, we learn. I think I've been saying route and route. I'm going back and forth. It's database.
Yeah. What gala. We've done this.
I can't commit.
I know. No.
So the train route started in California, went across the country to the East Coast, then returned empty back across the country heading west.
Yeah.
And we get this on-screen image, which is kind of crazy because the man's body was found almost exactly halfway through the train's trip back to California. It had delivered the precious cucumbers on the East Coast, and it's almost exactly halfway. Like, we see the dot on the map.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Yes. And so she's saying, like, because in the beginning, she was like, I want to follow the tracks to figure out where he was going, but then maybe they don't mean anything. But now she's like, well, so maybe they actually do mean something.
Right. So now we're at day two of the research with the DNA Doe Project, and they figure out...
Someone on the Doe's father's side has been uploading some family records.
She has a blog, a family history blog.
Can you send me the link?
Sure. Looks like she's done a lot of digging local resources.
Right, we have some original documents here, including some information on possible enslavers.
This is a gold mine.
Someone from our John Doe's father's side is actively researching their own genealogy and uploading documents and family history to a blog. This is her own blog. This is not a database. This is her own research that she just happens to be posting online of her own accord.
Which is weird because we never meet this person.
Right.
You know, but like this information is invaluable.
She's done a lot of digging. She's found a lot of stuff. They call her blog a gold mine.
I mean, and like just to say what's there because they tell us.
We have to talk about it.
There's information about possible enslavers. They find a bill of sale for one of the ancestors, meaning like one of the human enslaved ancestors. Like it's horrifying.
And this bill of sale, as horrifying as it is important because this is a bill of sale for one of her ancestors in Louisiana.
Yes.
And we're told, the quote is, he was sold from one enslaver to another in 1833. The Doe Project is like, this is better than anything we had.
Right, because it gives them a starting point. So the place is St. Landry Parish in Louisiana. And we learned there were over 11,000 people enslaved there. It was a hub for Louisiana cotton production. And many of the enslaved families may have remained there after emancipation.
Can I just say something about how much I love this show and why I think I do?
Sure.
So much of it is about defiance.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, it's never been as clear to me as it is in this episode, because with these awful like colonizers and enslavers, they wanted to erase people and not give them an identity and erase their identity. But like, that's not going to happen with these people.
Right.
We're not letting that happen. These people are not letting it happen.
Despite the fact that the way the enslavers, they literally did it so that something like this would not be possible, but we're doing it anyway.
Guess fucking what?
Yeah.
And like, I think that there's always-
I mean them. I don't
mean them. Right. Yeah, but like, so, yeah, it's just the identities will not be erased. list right. on these people's watches. And I think there's always a layer of that in this series,
yes.
but it's never been so clear as this episode. And it's just like, it moves me.
And part of, I think, also why this show is so amazing is because all of the people we meet are so, it's their singular mission.
Yeah.
Like, they're so driven to do it. Like, it doesn't matter how long it takes Jennifer and her team to do this. Like, they're going to do it. Girl, Rula is back. This is all about that convenient in-network online therapy.
Yeah, it's hard finding a good therapist.
It is.
That you work well with, you know? And so Rula does things differently. They partner with over 100 insurance plans, and the average copay is just $15 a session.
And it's true end-to-end care. So Rula is committed to supporting you and staying with you every step of the way on your mental health journey. So we're talking starting with finding the right therapist in the first place, helping you schedule appointments, and monitoring your progress. Rula is there to help. Those are like the three hardest things.
Yeah. And I just, quick reminder, these are all licensed professionals.
Yes, of course.
And the price makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's also easy to switch.
Yeah.
If you're not vibing with someone or whatever and you want to kind of shop around, it's very easy to do.
I remember finding my in-person therapist taking like months and months. Rula makes it so easy.
Yeah. And like, it sounds cheesy, but you're worth it. You should try someone.
Thank you, girl.
Yeah.
Fam, thousands of people are already using Rula to get affordable, high quality therapy that's actually covered by insurance.
Visit rula.com/TCO. To get started.
That's RULA.com/TCO.
You deserve mental health care that works with you, not against your budget.
Yes. Girl, the absorption company is back. And look, this week I want to talk to you about the WLP-1. So the WLP-1 is a daily weight management solution. And the WLP-1 supports weight management with ingredients clinically proven to increase natural GLP-1 by 321%.
That is crazy.
It's a lot. I know. I started taking it a little while back to support the GLP-1s I'm already on. And I got to say, like, I noticed a bit of a difference.
Well, here's the deal. They're called the absorption company, right?
Yeah.
So the biggest problem with supplements isn't what's in them. It's whether your body absorbs them at all.
Yeah.
So like most of the things you might be spending money on actually have really low absorption rates. So they're kind of not doing much of anything.
You're just taking them for nothing.
Right. So the absorption company is focused on solving that exact problem. They have pharmaceutical grade absorption technology designed to help nutrients actually work.
Yes. So this WLP-1, the whole point of it is that it supports thermogenesis, which is calories burned at rest, like when you're sitting watching Housewives.
Oh, great.
You know?
Look, you can get pretty ramped up.
It's, you know, you're that's true.
Depending on what episode you're watching.
That's true. But it also regulates appetite and cravings. It makes you feel full longer. And clinical studies conducted show that taking WLP-1 consistently has led up to 9 pounds of weight loss in just 4 weeks.
Yeah, and their whole thing is like having sustainable weight management that is much more about regulating cravings and metabolism,
yes.
and not just restricting every single thing you eat, which
yeah.
is exhausting and doesn't work.
No. So fam, whether you're looking for a WLP-1, magnesium, berberine, COQ10, or dozens of other science-backed supplements, start taking supplements your body can actually absorb.
Go to absorbmore.com and enter TCO at checkout for up to 35% off your first order.
That's absorbmore.com and enter code TCO at checkout to get 35% off your first order.
I'm totally absorbing.
You are absorbing.
So we're going to look into this area of Louisiana and the surrounding areas, because maybe people stayed there after
yes.
being emancipated. That is the hope. And guess what? Multiple matches from the John Doe's father's side live in one small area. So there's a very, very, very good chance that this is where the man's father came from.
Yes.
At the very, very least.
So Marissa is like desperately trying to figure out where the Doe may have gotten on the train when it stopped for fresh ice. And she learns, and this is incredible.
She's discovered there's someone in town who worked at the North Platte Rail Yard in the 60s, cleaning out the ice cars on their return trip from the East Coast.
Cleaning out the ice cars. Remember, this man, the Doe, was yeah. found in an ice car in North Platte in the 60s.
And specifically, his name is Leonard Spencer, specifically cleaning the ice cars on their way back from the East Coast.
Yeah.
So a local railway enthusiast.
I love these people.
Named Bob yes. is going to introduce Marissa to Leonard. And I'm like, see what happens when you're an enthusiast?
It is.
See what can happen?
And by the way, when we meet Leonard, Leonard also loved his job so much. He knows the date he started.
November the 9th, 1951.
And the date he retired.
June the 30th, 1990.
Like, unbelievable. I'm also like, you couldn't have done that last year to make it an even round, what's that, like 40 straight years? He did
yeah,
39.
Like anyway,
good for him.
He's exhausted. He says to Marissa, oh, I saw a lot of people riding the rails, especially black men,
yes.
hiding and asking him, like, what town are we in? And he says, most of the time, they're just trying to get to Chicago. these men and his and Leonard's experience.
But then he drops the bombshell.
Would you have ever saw somebody trying to be in the ice bunker?
Well, not until I run across the body at the bottom of a tank. Ice tank under about 5,000 pounds of ice.
Oh, wait a minute. You were the guy that found the body in the ice bunker?
Yeah, after I cleaned the ice out, that's when I found him, when I seen him.
Only one time did I come across a body at the bottom of a tank under about 5,000 pounds of ice. My notes say what for about five lines.
Mine just have letters.
Like
gibberish letters and numbers.
This man, Leonard, is the guy who found the doe that Marissa is trying to identify.
My jaw is dislocated.
Me too. And Marissa too. I watched it again today. I'm like, was this a setup? Did they know going into this? I don't think Marissa knew.
Even Bob the enthusiast is stunned.
The enthusiast is enthusiastic. This is the best day of everybody's life.
Now, I am a realist.
Yeah.
Okay. Could this all be TV magic?
I don't know. Marissa looks like really shocked.
She does. If it is,
yeah.
I don't care.
Right.
Because it got the job done.
It did.
It did what they wanted it to do, at least for me and for you, it seems.
Four lines of A before the T and what?
Like, I understand.
Yeah.
If they told me it was all, or we knew and didn't tell Marissa or whatever, because how do you get this guy? Production at least had to know.
Somebody somewhere probably knew.
I get it.
But is that wild?
I don't care.
Me either. This guy's still alive and he's the guy that found the, this is insane.
It got one hell of a gasp out of me and that's all they wanted.
Gay gasp.
Naming the dead, you got it.
You got it.
You got it. Which doesn't take much for this show for me. I am crying the entire time I'm watching this.
Same.
Mike is walking by my office going, are you okay? And I'm like, but Marissa's doing it.
I know. But we learned. So Marissa's got a bunch of questions for Leonard. Leonard, she wants to know like what Leonard saw when he saw the body. He said he basically saw the guy from the chest down. He says whether he was already dead when he was put in there or the ice killed him, I don't know.
Well, what is important is that he says,
whether he was already dead or the ice killed him and how long he'd been there, I don't know. Because he had to be in there before they put the ice in while it was empty. Because he was in there after I got the ice off of him.
He had to be in there before they put the ice in while it was empty because there wouldn't be any room otherwise.
Right.
And the man was found completely under all of the thousands of pounds of ice.
Yes.
So that means he had to be there before any ice was put in the bunker.
Yes.
The bunker had to be empty when he was in there, which means that it was at the very start of the train's journey in California.
Right.
So
meaning that when they found the body, he'd probably been dead for a long time.
And everything, Marissa's going through newspaper clippings and she's like, wait a second. Everything she thought she knew about the train's journey is not accurate.
Right.
Because the train was not going east right away. We thought it was like, start at the west, go to east.
Yes.
That's not what happened.
Right.
It didn't go straight across the country. It was heading south down California before going east.
Yes.
This changes a lot.
Yes.
So the DNA Doe Project is now looking into Louisiana, which is 2,000 miles away from California.
Right.
Because they think the John Doe's family stayed there after they were emancipated.
The dad's side.
Right. So Janelle Daniels is here. She's a volunteer. She's like, no problem. This is easy for me because I'm awesome. All we need to do is find a migration pattern that links us from Louisiana to California. And I'm like, cool, Janelle, I'm in. Let's go.
Me too. I had to watch this like three times to sort of try to understand what was happening here.
Like, it's nothing.
I know.
Like, all we need to do is find a migration pattern. Janelle, I'm with you.
Just in case you're like unclear what's happening, we found the dad's family in Louisiana.
The John Doe's dad's family.
Yes, but we learned that the Doe got on the train in California. Why was he there?
2,000 miles away.
Exactly.
So I just also want to hit home. This is painstaking work.
Yes.
These people are no strangers to the work. We know that, but I want them to know that we know that it's painstaking work. And I'm like, never gonna not let them know that.
No. Yeah. We're talking 4 a.m, hair in the top knot, pencils, everything.
And they're all volunteers.
All volunteers.
So they find someone in California.
Yeah.
Who is from the man's mother's side. We already have the Doe's father's side.
Yeah.
Now, this could be a major breakthrough. We can now connect the two sides. What?
And Jennifer is on the ground in California. She's in her car. She's like, well, we've never done this before, but sometimes when you got a really tough case, you got to think outside the box.
And guess what?
It turns out that this mother's side DNA relative actually lives in the same area that the family on the paternal side of our Doe lives. You know, you can't make this up, right? Just a total surprise.
the families live in the same town but don't know each other.
Jennifer's like, I cannot, we have never ever done this.
We cannot make it up.
This is a really big opportunity for everyone. Like,
so Jennifer's going to bring them together because the idea is we've got to figure out how they got from Louisiana to California. We're going to bring both sides of the family together who've never met each other before, and we're just going to sit around and tell stories.
And we see everyone meeting and they're saying, the John Doe, he has brought us together. What a blessing. This show, I swear to God.
I know. Because we're at this big family reunion and everyone, they're meeting each other for the first time, but they're so happy to be meeting each other.
Right.
And like getting to the, they're so happy that this woman is looking for this relative.
Right. And like sharing with each other. They're talking about who met who and when they met and where they met and birthdays and where they moved and when, and talking about extended families. And they realize there's a whole faction of people that they don't know about, that they're learning through each other.
And there's like a whole, they're basically saying there's a whole family, like a whole generation of the intermingling of our families that is missing.
That neither side really knows about, but through their stories, they're learning that it exists in the first place. Like, it's incredible. Right.
Because we've got the dad's side in Louisiana, the mom's side in California. We kind of figure out how the family got from Texas to California, but we don't really know where the mom's side of the family was before that.
And now, this is really Marissa's time to shine. She's been shining the whole time.
Yes.
But she says,
a couple of things I'm good at is reaching people and connecting with audiences. So I think it's time for me to do another news story and get the word out.
She's going to get a news story out on this. And she says, my mom always says, nothing beats a failure more than a try. I swear to God, I'm going to lose my shit. Make 10,000 more episodes of this program.
And give Marissa her own show, by the way.
My mom always says, nothing beats a failure than a try.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
I know.
We got the enthusiasts. We got the families coming together. I can't stand it.
But we start to narrow it down that like the dad side moved from Louisiana to Beaumont, Texas. The mom's side lived in Texas before she went to California. So they're thinking that the parents must have met in Texas at some point.
And so Marissa's like, okay, like she's trying to put herself in Roseville, California in 1961. Was this guy working? Was he hanging out? She's like, I don't know. Like, did he hop on that train to head home, which broke my heart?
Yeah.
And she's like, and then he didn't know. And then like the bunker was iced. And I'm like, it's so heartbreaking for a million reasons, but especially like, because this was supposed to be the safer way to travel.
Well, and that's the whole thing. Because Marissa is saying like, I originally thought he was traveling thousands of miles to see his family across the country. But what if he was just in Northern California, trying to go a couple towns south because that's the way this train was going. And he had to do it this way because he couldn't take the bus because taking the bus was fucking dangerous.
And according to our enthusiast and the president of the Railroad Society or whatever, like he was like, that would happen all the time. Yes. I was always meeting black men who were like, where am I exactly? Right. I need to get here.
Yes, yes.
So that is definitely a major, major, major possibility.
Girl, Ethos is a new sponsor. So Ethos makes getting life insurance fast and easy 100% online.
Yeah, we've talked about this topic a lot on this little show of ours.
When they started with us, I really had a thought that I had a friend in college whose dad died unexpectedly. She had three younger sisters, mm-hmm. and the mom didn't know that the dad had life insurance until after he died. And it was a lifesaver because the mom hadn't been at work in like years and years and years. And without life insurance, their life would have like completely fallen apart. The point is life insurance is an absolute lifesaver.
Yeah, and with Ethos, you can get a quote in seconds, apply in minutes, and even get same-day coverage.
And this is the thing. This actually held me up from getting life insurance for a long time. There's no medical exam, and you just answer a few simple health questions. Like, there's no barriers to doing it.
Right. And you can get up to $3 million in coverage, and some policies are as low as $30 a month.
Yeah, and you'll get their lowest rate from their network of trusted carriers.
Yeah, don't believe what the documentaries tell you. Having life insurance isn't a bad thing.
No, it's you just need it.
The shady people do shady things, but like, truly, you do need life insurance.
Good in life insurance happens to bad people all the time.
All the time.
So fam, take 10 minutes to get covered today with life insurance through Ethos.
Get your free quote at ethos.com/TCO.
That's ethos.com/TCO.
Application times may vary. Rates may vary.
Marissa's going to do like a news report. Like that's what the ultimate thing that's going to happen here. She's bringing all of the families together to participate in this report. the family is so grateful for her. She's so grateful for them. Marissa is really talking about how, like, the story really highlights why it's important to know your roots. And then somebody says, and why we don't.
Right.
I mean, and really think about that, because, like, the whole point about how pre-emancipation, they weren't given names and documents. Like,
right.
This is why they don't have access to their stories before that time.
Right. And for Marissa to say, like, this easily could have been solved if we had our full family trees.
Yes.
And that's when the person's like, but we know why we don't.
Right.
So Marissa, and it's so amazing, all of these family members are coming together. They're bringing people mm-hmm. that Marissa hasn't met yet. Like,
the,
like,
also haven't met each other because it's cousins and family from the other side.
And then Marissa unveils the facial reconstruction that the DNA Doe Project created, and everyone's emotional. And I'm like, there he is.
This guy.
Oh my God, there he is.
He's so handsome. It
there
like took my breath away. Somebody pulls out a phone and was like, this is my nephew. It's a spitting image. And we see an iPhone picture next to like the facial reconstruction.
Yeah.
And it's almost as though the facial reconstruction is a copy of the iPhone picture.
The resemblance is undeniable.
It's unbelievable.
Undeniable. And like we meet Chris, who's on the John Doe's mother's side.
Yeah.
And he goes,
the first thing that came to my mind is like, I can feel it in my bones saying like, you know, help me out, help me. Nobody has to be alone. It's like an aching inside.
He's saying, help me. Nobody has to be alone. There's like an aching inside.
I can feel it in my bones.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So this man's family is here. He brought these two sides together. They didn't even know they existed before this.
Yeah.
And now as we're ending, it sort of gets turned around. Like now it's up to you and us.
This was the moment I realized like we're not going to solve it in this episode. I was like, oh God. Oh my God. I've not seen one where we haven't gotten to the bottom of it before.
So like this man has roots in Texas, Louisiana, and Alabama. There's a whole DNADoeProject.org like page. I DM Marissa because I was like, what is the most recent call to action?
Yeah.
Is there anything? I said, we have this platform. We want to use it. Like, tell me what to say.
Yeah.
So she said, and I quote, we are still looking for connecting points and other leads. The best call to action is for people, especially African-Americans, to follow their ancestry through DNA and or family records. I wish finding his identity would be simple, but it will take more people willing to go on the journey with their own family trees to close this case.
Yeah.
And so I sent you the article today.
Yeah.
Remember a couple of, I think the last time we did a Naming the Dead episode, we were talking about how very rightfully so, people, especially African-Americans, are like, I'm not putting my DNA in a database
yeah.
that can get used against me.
Yes.
And I was like, don't worry, we'll get back to it.
Yep.
So in the article that Marissa did on like www.wave3.com, like on her news site,
yeah.
Jennifer Randolph, the head of the DNA Doe Project, says you're not giving all of your genetic information or putting it in a database where it can be used against you.
Right.
She says so very plainly, you pick and choose how your information is used. In each database, there are unidentified human remains and suspect cases. After violent crimes, there's DNA from crime scenes that can be used to identify suspects. So she says, even though people fear that law enforcement will be able to access their DNA information, that is not true. That's what she says. She
okay.
says it only shows where the DNA profiles overlap and the information is private. So she ends by saying, like, you should always read the terms and conditions.
Yes.
But she is saying specifically in the article that Marissa put out there, like, it is safe for you to do this. And we, that community, especially people with slavery in their roots, in their
yeah.
history, it's so important that you do this so we can get the identities back. Like, these slave owners aren't going to fucking win.
Oh, yeah.
They're
oh,
not winning.
Yes, yes, yes,
so
yes.
So we understand the fear, but that link is out there. Marissa, like, got the story. So Jennifer Randolph from the DNA Doe Project is saying that it's safe. So we got it. We got to find out who this guy is, everybody.
Oh, we got to, well, we need to set Google alerts so we can have updates if there are any.
You I'm think
sorry,
I have it?
You, let me rephrase that. I should set my own Google alert so I can get an update if there is one.
And the DNA Doe Project is so great. Like, this guy, if you just, like, Google this case, the DNA Doe Project page will come right up. And they have, like, dated updates. So you can always go there and check back. They will have your back. They will always update the cases.
What? Yeah, you're going to... Don't leave us for the DNA Doe Project.
I'm not going to leave it. But I am going to love it. And I am going to cry every time I watch it.
Yeah.
And I am going to tell these people how much I love them.
We love you, DNA Doe
Project. We love you, DNA Doe Project.
Oh my God, girl, we did Naming the Dead, The Body on the Train. Are we doing all of them?
Yeah, we're going to do all of them.
Okay.
I believe for our bonus episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this is our 8th bonus episode. I hope you're enjoying them so far.
Oh, good. Oh my God.
But there's like a lot more coming.
All right. Amazing. Yeah. Fam, we love you. Get out of here. Go do something good.
Go do something good.
Go do something good in the world.
Oh my God, we love you. Thank you, Marissa. You're a badass.
Marissa, you're the best.
Obsessed with you.
All right, bye.
Bye.